dance beyond this illusion. I was soaring ever higher.
Dose of Reality Radio. I'm James Sloan, your host tonight. Okay, on the agenda tonight, first and foremost, we've got 9/11 again. I wanted to air some new material that I actually found as I was building our YouTube channel, which you can find links to on the main page on the website. We've built built up quite a nice channel for you guys, which long overdue. But since they've tinkered around with YouTube, they've tinkered around with it several times over the last several years. It's very difficult to navigate. It's very difficult to learn how to use it. But we finally, after devoting much time to it, managed to get the channel up and running, which is a positive thing. And we got lots of playlists from No Planes, a playlist to just other False Flags, the Moon Hoax, health issues. We got all the good playlists, as well as I've uploaded a lot of sort of quite rare material that I had. So just in regards to general sort of 9/11 fakery clips. So we got a good new channel there, and I sort of urge everyone to check that out, because there's a whole new audience on YouTube, which, you know, which is some of obviously a lot of what we already have, and then just a whole lot of another audience out there that we can break into. So hopefully we'll get that. It's the Real News YouTube channel, but it's under the Brian Staveley username. But if you just key in the Real News, or if not, you can get the links from the main website at realnewsonline.com. Now, the material I'm going to be going through tonight is not often heard. It's good stuff that we've never aired on this network before. Stuff we often skip over, you know, that was released in the earlier days and not gone over sort of with a fine-tooth comb. Just sort of accepted, and about some of those early documentaries that came out in the first few years, and I have gone into the stuff in depth before, actually, in those earlier shows that I did earlier on this year. We went into a lot of fake witnesses from a documentary. It was a Tale of the Two Towers, came out in 2002. So I've gone into some of the stuff before. Not the clips we're using tonight, so it's nothing. It's a similar format, but it was just a wealth of the stuff that I have sort of saved over the years. Never really had a way to broadcast it, but some of the more outrageous stuff that was ever put out, those documentaries over the first sort of few years, and just absolutely ridiculous stuff that, primarily what we're going to be looking at is phone calls, from allegedly from the towers, from the airplanes, audio recordings, just things that we can really see right through now as the frauds that they are, and stuff that, despite what it's aiming to do, further points out, for sure what we already know, that the World Trade Center was, by and large, totally empty on 9/11. And also on the channel, I've also put up a lot of videos, construction videos we have, that, and also clips from movies that were shot in the late 60s, early 70s, which show the World Trade Center at various stages of construction. Hollywood films that were shot in New York and show quite clearly the hollow towers, or at least parts thereof, were completely hollow, were never finished. And you can see right through the tower. It's quite embarrassing, really. And there's some of the good work that they did at Let's Roll Forums, it must be said. Two or three years ago, but you can see right through the towers, and also the way we were told the building was constructed was, concrete was laid very much as you go, so once the building is totally, standing, it's structurally complete, and yet, the opportunity to get all the concrete up there and lay it was very much lost once you continued. So if we have the building completely structurally completed, like we did it even in the 1978 picture, and we see the same thing, 7-8 years later from the early 70s, we know that those floors were never completed. And once the tower is topped out, or even once you go a few floors beyond that point because of the kangaroo crane system that they use, you couldn't lay the concrete. There's no way, real way to get it up there. You couldn't get it up in the elevators. you know, we're talking about an acre worth of 4-inch thick concrete on every floor. You know, once you kept building, you lost that opportunity to lay concrete, to lay floor panels. I mean, you can't go back in and lay those prefabricated floor panels after you're already building floors on top of that. You know, once you go up, that's it. You lose the opportunity to build those floors. So it's very, very damning footage. Much of the building, as we're told it was built, was, you know, prefabricated on the ground and sort of hoisted into position and bracket welded and bolted. So, you know, it's very damning footage, and it really is undebunkable from that perspective. But on to the agenda tonight. The first call I wanted to play was you know, many of you may have heard it, some of you may not have, the Betty Ong phone call from, allegedly from Flight 11, which is the final 8 minutes of the flight, supposedly, and I'm going to key that video up now, and we're going to listen to it, and have some commentary on it once it is completed. But it's very interesting, and basically the backstory of it is, you know, this is supposedly from Flight 11, the first plane supposedly hijacked, and she's called the American Airlines Center and basically is describing the situation on board the flight. And very interesting. And so many things that are wrong with it that should be there that aren't there. And we will definitely see what those are as we listen to the audio clip. And it's just a big forgery that... And this call actually was known about, but didn't. This audio wasn't released until 2004, 3 years after the fact, but still relatively early on in terms of the so-called truth movement. Or, you know, truth movement wasn't really around too much then. But anyway, we're going to listen to this phone call, and yeah, it makes very, very interesting listening, for sure. Just get this.
We're sitting in the back. The cockpit's not answering. Somebody's stabbed in business class. And I think there's mates that we can't breathe. I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked.
Which flight are you on?
Flight 12.
And what seat are you in? Ma'am, are you there?
Yes.
What seat are you in?
Ma'am, what seat are you in? We just left Boston. We're up in the air.
I know.
We're supposed to go to L.A., and the cockpit's not answering their phone.
Okay, but what seat are you sitting in? What's the number of your seat?
Okay, I'm in my jump seat right now.
Okay.
At 3R.
Okay, you're the flight attendant? I'm sorry, did you say you're the flight attendant?
Hello?
Yes, hello? What is your name?
Hi. I'm going to have to speak up. I can't hear you.
Sure. What is your name?
Okay, my name is Betty Ong. I'm number 3 on flight 11.
Okay.
And the cockpit is not answering their phone.
And there's somebody stabbed in business class, and we can't breathe in business class. Somebody's got mace or something.
Can you describe the person that you said someone is what in business class?
I'm sitting in the back. Somebody's coming back from business. If you can hold on for 1 second, sure. They're coming back. Our number one got stabbed. Our person is stabbed. Nobody knows who stabbed who, and we can't even get up to business class right now because nobody can breathe. Our number one is stabbed right now.
Okay.
Our number 5, our first class passengers, our first class galley flight attendant, and our purser has been stabbed. And we can't get the cockpit. The door won't open. Hello?
Yeah, I'm taking down all the information. We're also, you know, of course, recording this. At this point...
This is operations. What flight number are we talking about?
Flight 12.
Flight 12. Okay, I'm
We're on flight 11 right now. This is flight 11.
It's flight 11. I'm sorry, Nitty.
Boston to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Our number 1 has been stabbed, and our 5 has been stabbed. Anybody get
up to the cockpit? Can anybody get up to the cockpit? We can't even get into the cockpit. We don't know who's up there.
Well, if they were shrewd, they would keep the door closed and...
I'm sorry?
Would they not maintain a sterile cockpit?
I think the guys are up there. They might have jammed their way up there or something. Nobody can call the cockpit. We can't even get inside. There?
Yes, we're still here.
Okay. I'm staying on the line as well.
Okay.
Hi, who is calling reservations? Is this one of the flight attendants or who are you, hon?
She gave her name as Betty Ong.
Betty? Yeah, I'm number three. I'm number three on this flight.
And you're the number first... three on the flight?
Yes.
And this is flight 11? From where to
flight
where?
Flight 11.
Have you guys called anyone else?
No. Somebody's calling medical, and we can't get a stop.
American Airlines emergency line, please state your emergency.
Hey, this is Nitty at American Airlines calling. I am monitoring a call in which Flight 11... The flight attendant is advising our reps that the pilot, everyone's been stabbed.
Flight 11?
Yep. They can't get into the cockpit is what I'm hearing.
Okay, who is this I'm talking to?
Excuse me, this is the American Airlines at the Raleigh Reservation Center. I'm the operations specialist on duty.
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Nydia.
Nydia. And what's your last name?
Gonzalez. G-O-N-C-A-L-E-Z.
Raleigh Reservations. Okay.
I'm a flight attendant on the line with one of our agents.
Okay. And she's calling how?
Through reservations. I can go in on the line and ask the flight attendant questions.
Okay. I'm assuming they've declared an emergency. Let me get ATC on here. Stand by.
Gotten any contact with anybody? Okay, I'm still on with security, okay, Betty? You're doing a great job. Just stay calm, okay? We are, absolutely.
Okay, we're contacting a flight crew now. We're also contacting ATC.
Okay. It seems like the passengers and the coach might not be aware of what's going on right now.
These two passengers were from first class.
Okay, hold on. Hey, Betty? Do you know any information as far as the gentlemen that are in the cockpit with the pilot? Were they from first class? They were sitting in 2A and B. They are in the cockpit with the pilot.
Who's helping them? Is there a doctor on board?
Is there a doctor on board, Betty, that's assisting you guys? You don't have any doctors on board, okay. So you've gotten all the first class passengers out of first class?
Have they taken everyone out of first class?
Yeah, she's just saying that they have. They're in coach. What's going on, honey? Okay, the aircraft is erratic again. Very radically. She did say that all the first class passengers have been moved back to coach. So first class, the cabin is empty. What's going on your end, Tig?
We contacted air traffic control. They are going to handle this for the confirmed hijacking. So they're moving all the traffic out of this aircraft's way.
Okay.
He turned his transponder off, so we don't have a definitive altitude for him. We're just going by, they seem to think that they have him on a primary radar, they seem to think that he is descending.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Lydia?
Yes, dear, I'm here.
Okay. I have the dispatcher currently taking the current fuel on board.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to run some profiles.
Okay.
To see exactly what his endurance is.
Okay.
passengers?
She doesn't have an idea who the other passenger might be in first. Apparently they might have spread something, so it's they're having a hard time breathing or getting in that area. What's going on, Betty? Betty, talk to me. Betty, are you there? Betty? Listen, do you think you lost her? Okay, so we'll stay open. I think we might have lost her.
So, I mean, there's so many things wrong with that piece of audio that, you know, you don't even know where to start. I mean, first of all, it was the most poignant. I mean, obviously we know that there were no planes involved. I mean, we've gone into that issue, you know, a million times on the show. So, I mean, we're not going to spend too much time, you know, getting into that aspect of it. But, I mean, just, I think playing this piece of audio is quite powerful because, you know, I remember showing, you know, many people like Loose Change and, you know, things like that. And even people aren't necessarily awake, you know, and this phone call was featured in that documentary. And I mean, it's just so obvious that it was filmed in a studio somewhere, even the people in the center. I mean, there's no sense of any emergency. There's no, you know, it's just dealing with the situation so, like, so unprofessionally and so slow. You know, you can't hear anybody in the background on her end. You can't hear, you know, screaming. You can't hear, you know, you can't hear any passengers. You got to bear in mind that Flight 11, with all four of these alleged planes, you know, were sparsely occupied. Flight 11 supposedly had the most passengers at 91, so you got 91 passengers on board this plane. 767, you can't hear anybody in the background. You can't hear any pandemonium or any such thing. You can't hear a single other voice. And in every single one of the calls that we're going to go into on this episode, you can't hear any voices either. It's completely absurd to think that this is a legitimate account of something happening on an aircraft. I mean, we already have the ridiculous story, the implication that with box cutters, no less, that these 19 hijackers across four flights managed to, you know, basically murder eight pilot and co-pilots because, you know, doing that in an isolated cockpit with a box cutter is hard enough work by itself. I mean, how do you kill someone with a box cutter? I mean, you know, we've been into... And these were small guys too, like, and these pilots, some of these pilots were supposedly ex-military, and, you know, we've gone into that in great detail, but, you know, not only, I guess, do we have at least eight pilots and co-pilots across the four planes that were killed, and swiftly too. The story is they didn't even enter the four-digit hijack code or anything like that. And like I've mentioned in other shows, in a cockpit you have at the very least a fire extinguisher, an axe, oxygen tanks, and any other personal effects they may have brought in with them, the pilots and co-pilots. So, you know, they have weapons far beyond box cutters to defend themselves, with potential weapons to defend themselves with. That's bad enough. They didn't. None of them entered the four-digit hijack code, allegedly. You know, I mean, there was no flight, so it's just all hypothetical. But as ridiculous as that is, and they must have, I don't know, cut their throats or whatever they did, and they kind of sent more than two guys in the cockpit at the time, so these pilots put up no fight whatsoever. It's completely ridiculous. Then, of course, you know, and these were like smaller guys, you know, like the pilots were actually quite big guys, you know, 200 pounds plus, ex-military, particularly the case of the Pentagon flight of 77, allegedly. You know, and that's bad enough. I mean, but then, so we've got another, at least a purser and a passenger stabbed on this one flight, and it seems mortally wounded, or, you know, so basically that takes the death toll to 10 people that they managed to kill with these box cutters. I mean, seriously, I was moving house the other day with a friend, and, you know, there was a box cutter lying around, and, like, granted, there are different types of box cutters, and it was never really elaborated as to what types, but, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous to think that you could, you know, cut somebody's throat with one of those, or kill someone. I mean, maybe once, but, like, to kill at least 10 different people with a box cutter, like, it's just so ridiculously hard to believe. The passengers have their luggage, they have personal effects, the crew have food trolley, perhaps. if they had it handy. And the pilots and co-pilots we know have at the very least an axe, a fire extinguisher, and oxygen tanks to defend themselves with, which are weapons that are far more daunting than a box cutter. The whole story is absolutely ridiculous, as is the sprayed mace and the... Look, airport security was no joke prior to 9/11. I can attest to that, even though I was only a child traveling extensively in the United States at that time. You couldn't get knives on planes. You couldn't get... maybe one or two people, but 19 different separate people. Let's face it, Middle Eastern guy is suspicious looking. Those are the stereotypes, whether we like it or not. And none of these guys were subject to any advanced screening. They just walked through the metal detectors, walked onto the place. It's a completely ridiculous story. 19 different separate guys being able to do that. Not even subject to any further search. It's completely and utterly ridiculous. Like I said, airport security is just invasive at this stage. But it certainly was no joke back then at all. And hadn't been for decades. It's just complete. The story is completely ridiculous. And not to mention, she wrongly identifies a flight number versus flight 12. I'm not going to spend much time on this call, but just a ridiculous example of something that is just completely fictitious. And now they got mace on the planes as well as these box cutters. Just a totally ridiculous story. And I'm not going to go through and point out all of the things that were wrong with that call, but it's just recorded in a studio, and I've even had people admit to me who believe the official story, or at least aren't at the level that even loose change level, they can see right through that. You can't listen to that and seriously think that that's real. There's no panic in a voice. There's no interaction with anybody else on the plane. It's just pathetic is what it is. It's pathetic. But people buy it. And this was released 3 years after. So it's not like this was, on the day or the day after we had sort of taken anything that they tell you. How anybody could listen to that and think that that's legitimate, I'm not quite sure. But we know there were no planes anyway. So it's all sort of details at this stage. But the fact that people could believe that is something else. But what I'm going to do now is key up, get some more phone calls in here, and that's it for the plane stuff. We don't really need to go too much into that. We know the absurdity of those calls. But we're going to listen to a couple of calls now from the towers that were put out probably around about the same time, and we'll have a listen to these calls, because these are actually even more absurd, if that was even possible. So I'm going to load these up now, and we're going to listen to two phone calls. One from a man called Kevin Cosgrove, who we have obvious photoshopped images of also. And Brian, the Vic Sims, we've gone into detail of that a lot in previous shows. And another lesser known call from Melissa Doy, or whatever her name is. So I'm going to load these up now and listen to them all. We'll actually probably take a break after that, and then we'll come back and get into these two phone calls, this piece of audio that I'm about to play now.
I've had the notifications made.
What's that?
What's the telephone number waiting for FC to pick up? What's the telephone number you're calling?
The
Grand C. You can do
any C. 441-2623.
441-2623.
Okay. It's on 105th floor on the northwest corner, right? Right.
At number 2 World Trade Center, right.
The lady, there's three of us in this office. We're not ready to die, but it's getting bad.
I understand, sir. We can get those cars all the apparatus there. I'm trying to let them know where you are.
Oh, please, Larry.
fire department 408. Let me talk to the caller. Where is he?
He's on the line.
Let me talk to him. Where is the fire, sir?
Oh, it was smoke. New door, 105, 2 power.
All right, sit tight. We'll get to you as soon as we can.
Where's he staying up? The smoke's really bad, man.
It's a barely lead. That's all we can do. Where are you?
What floor are you guys up to?
We're getting there.
Doesn't feel like it, man. I got young kids.
I understand that, sir. We're on the way.
He's on the 105th corner, northwest corner.
We have no problem. Little operator?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Okay, we have everything, sir.
I know you do, but it doesn't seem like it. You got lots of people up here.
I understand.
I know you got a lot in the building, but we're in the room up on the top. Smoke rises. It's right there. We're on the floor. We're in the window. Come on, we have to be in green now. Can't see.
Okay. Just try to hang in there. I'm going to stay with you.
Did you say you're in an air-conditioned building? What the hell happened?
Okay, I'm still here. He's been trying to fire the car. He's trying to get to you.
Does it feel like it?
Okay, try to calm down so you can conserve your oxygen, okay? Try to.
Thank God to blow you in from the left. It's really bad. It's black. It's arid. Does anybody else want to try in here? Are these young men, we're not ready to die.
I understand.
How the hell are you going to get my ass down? I need oxygen.
They're
getting
to you. They have a lot of apparatus on the
team. You guys didn't see what I did, lady. You get them in from all over. They get them in from Jersey. I don't give a shit.
Okay, so what's your last name?
Mine's Cosgrove. Grove. I must have called about a dozen times already. C-O-S-G-R-O-V-E.
Yeah.
My wife thinks I'm all right. I called her and said I was leaving the building. I was fine, and bang.
Well, I want to...
Hold on. Cherry. Dead Cherry's next to me.
105.
Who's office?
John Astro's office. That's the office?
We're in John Astro's office.
O-S-T.
A-R-U.
O-R-U?
Right, that's the office we're in. There's three of us in here.
O-S-T-A-R-U. Hello?
Hello? We're looking at the financial center. Two, three of us, two broken windows.
Oh, God! Ah!
Message number 100.
Good morning, have a good day.
Hi, what's your number again, please?
865.
I'm on the 83rd floor.
86 what?
I'm on the 83rd floor.
86 what? 8695. 8695?
She at the World Trade Center. Someone having difficulty breathing on the 83rd floor.
Okay, ma'am, how you doing?
Are they going to be able to get somebody up here?
Well, of course, ma'am. We're coming up to you.
Well, there's no one here yet, and the floor is completely engulfed. We're on the floor, and we can't breathe.
Okay.
And it's very, very, very hot.
Are the lights still on?
The lights are on, but it's very hot.
Ma'am.
Very hot. We're all the way on the other side of Liberty, and it's very, very hot.
Any lights? So you can turn the lights off?
No, the lights are off.
Okay, good. Now, everybody stay calm. You're doing a good job.
Please.
Ma'am, listen. Damn if everybody's coming, everybody knows. Everybody knows what happened, okay?
Yeah.
But no, they have to take time to come up here. You know that. Got to be very careful.
Very hot.
I understand. Got to be very, very careful how they approach you, okay? all right? So when they come upstairs, it won't be worse than it is. Now, you stay calm. And so how many people where you're at right now?
There's like 5 people here with me.
All up from the 83rd floor?
83rd floor.
With 5 people. 5 patients. Everybody's having trouble breathing?
Everybody's having trouble breathing. Some people are worse.
And some people are unconscious. Everybody's awake?
So far, yes. But it's
listen. Everybody's awake?
Yes, so far.
Conscious. And it's very hot there, but no fire, right?
I can't see because it's too hot.
Very hot. No fire for now, and no smoke, right? No smoke, right?
Of course there's smoke.
Ma'am, you have to stay calm.
There is smoke. I can't breathe.
Okay, you stay calm with me, okay? I understand
you. I think there is fire because it's very hot.
Okay.
It's very hot everywhere on the floor.
Okay. I know you don't see it, and I know, but I'm documenting what you say, okay? And it's very hot. We see no fire, but you see smoke, right?
It's very hot. I see any air anymore.
Okay.
All I see is smoke.
Okay, dear. I'm so sorry. Hold on one. Stay calm with me. Stay calm.
Please. Listen.
The call is in. I'm documenting. I'm going to let those... Hold on 1 second, please.
I'm going to die, aren't I?
No.
I'm going to die.
Ma'am, say your prayers. And we're not going to... We're going to think positive because you got to help each other get off the floor.
Stay calm.
God. You're doing a good job, ma'am. You're doing a good job.
I'm burning up.
The floor is hot and everything is hot. They're all their desks. When you go up high, you get too close away from the smoke. Okay. I know you know. Hold on a second.
83rd floor, 3 people trapped. Very hot on the 83rd floor. 3 people trapped. Having trouble breathing. It's very hot.
Wait, we hear voices. Help! Help!
That's what I'm doing. I'm just letting you know. Okay. Hello, ma'am?
Help!
Here's that call. Ma'am?
Help!
Stay calm. Just don't move.
Oh, my God.
They coming through with you now?
Find out if there's anybody here on the 83rd floor.
Ma'am, don't worry. You stay on the phone with me, and
find out if there's anyone on the 83rd floor? Because
ma'am, I already
heard somebody.
Excuse me. I already notified the lieutenant, okay? 8-0, I notified the city.
8-0?
Yes, Lieutenant 8-0. I already notified the lieutenant that there's 5 people on the 4th floor, right? Very hot and smoky. So they will overlook you, okay, dear?
Can you?
I already did that.
Can I go along with you, please?
Yes, ma'am. I am going to stay with you.
I'm dying.
Listen. Take.
They're here.
Are they inside with you yet, dear?
No.
Okay, stay calm until they get inside.
Find out where they are.
Ma'am, stay calm until they get inside.
Karen.
Hey,
ma'am.
What's the job number you have?
I have 727.
727.
Yes.
Hello.
Always wanting more, eating and longing for black velvet and that little boy's smile.
Okay, welcome back to Dose of Reality. You're with James Sloan tonight. Now, I mean, where do you even start? I mean, you want to talk about low rate. It's not even a B, it's more like a G rate movie acting. I mean, like, seriously, I mean, the most poignant thing, you know, that you pick up on right away and that you notice if you have even a modicum of discernment of what a situation like that would, could, or should be like is, why the hell is nobody coughing? I mean, you got people in this call saying, in these two calls saying how they can't breathe, they can't see, the smoke is so arid, and particularly, you know, thick black smoke like that of what we saw on the television footage. I mean, you'll be coughing and you wouldn't be able to breathe. You would, the people would be instructing them to, you know, put like a wet cloth or shirt or something over them, or you know, do something. You would hear them cough. I mean, come on, even the movie, The Towering Inferno, got it much closer what it would be like than this. It's complete, utter crap. It's garbage. I mean, it's clearly been recorded in a studio. It's a poor job. Once again, you know, we were told that 25,000 people escaped from that building and that 2,900 died between the two. Or did 50,000, I don't know, did 25 or 50,000 escape? We've heard different stories. You know, these floors are 1 acre in area, so they're not all that big. I mean, that's a reasonably big floor, but these people are jam-packed in here, and you can't hear anybody in the background, you can't hear anybody screaming. We're told that 250 people jumped from these towers, at least that's a story we're given from ABC, the figure that they gave us. Yeah, to not hear anybody coughing or to not hear anyone in the background is just completely and utterly ridiculous. Is in no way, shape, or form a depiction of what it would be like. You know, even some of the more obvious street acting interviews that we saw had people coughing, you know, from that dust, you know, later on in the relative safety of the street interviews, you know, hours later, people coughing. And, you know, it's just completely ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, come on. How anybody, and yet you go to the YouTube page and these calls have hundreds of thousands of listens, and nobody's talking about the obvious. I mean, where's the coughing? Where's the spluttering? Where's the despair? I mean, there's not too much of it. And they both sort of abuse the operator about halfway through the call. So the calls are very similar in that regard. It's the same structure. You know, and how did Kevin Cosgrove manage to break the window? I mean, like I said, you know, we've talked about this before. How did all these people break these windows? Extremely thick safety glass they use in the high-rise. That building had to withstand 160-kilometer, 100-mile-an-hour winds. You know, the safety glass they use in those buildings, you can't break it with a desk or a chair. And yet all these people managed to break these windows clean out of their frames. You know, not even like a spider's web or whatever, just clean out. You know, completely ridiculous. And then obviously the Hollywood... at the end, towards the end there, the Kevin call, and then finally the Melissa one, she starts sort of abusing the operator, and you know, it's just completely and utterly ridiculous. I mean, I could break down the call and say all the ridiculous things, but you know, she says, oh, I'm burning up, I'm about to die. You really think you'd stay on the phone, or you would try and find a fucking way out? I mean, you know, it's completely, you know, it just defies logic, it defies credibility. Yeah, there's just no way that those calls are, you know, whether you believe that there were people in the towers or not, those calls are not a depiction of somebody who died in those buildings that day. Depending on which floor Melissa is in, she may be below where the plane went, and if she's in the north tower, if she's in the south, well, there were people that escaped allegedly from those floors. We're told that as many as 24 people escaped from above the impact zone in that particular building, and in the other building many people escaped from that floor and higher. People walked right through the floor, through the impact zone of the south tower. That call could only realistically be from the south tower, and yet we're told that all these official story is all these people walked down through that impact zone. And they weren't burning up. They were, I mean,
fires, alleged fires, and those weren't even that hot. I mean, that call is just a complete fabrication, a complete fraud, and every detail of it goes against so much of what we've seen and heard from other accounts. But, I mean, all the accounts are bullshit, but these two recordings that we just heard are obvious frauds, and they'd be very good material to play to people and point out, you know, when you're dying in a building fire, you, or close to that point, you, when the smoke is so bad or whatever, how can you not be coughing? Not even one. I promise you now, every phone call I play you today, you will not hear one single cough. It's like someone being shot and there's no blood. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's Hollywood. So it's all it is. And I'm not even going to waste any more time on those frauds. But, you know, like I said, with Kevin Cosgrove, we also have Photoshop pictures. Although some newer pictures appeared in a documentary I'm about to play some calls from. Including, you know, there was an interview with his wife on there as well. So they are stepping up their game. But some of those earlier pictures, obvious Photoshop fabrications that we've done a lot of work on the website on. The victims, and obviously some good work from September Clues and other places on some of that stuff. And that's all there really is to say about those calls. But we're going to move on now and play some audio from a documentary that I watched just the other night. It was released in 2009. This was 8 years after 9/11, so around the anniversary. So you know, a lot of opportunity to really solidify. This was a much better effort. This had some, for the first time I've seen, you know, pretty much ever, some home video from a lot of alleged victims and some really good pictures that were not obvious shop jobs, but an analysis of the calls shows that they can't possibly be legitimate. But I will go into more detail about that as and sort of when it comes along. So I'm going to be playing some more clips, and particularly I'm going to play the first 8 or so minutes from this documentary, and this is because there's some good audio in here, and a couple more calls, and despite the fact this documentary says that these calls are being heard for the first time, the 21 seconds of audio that I played at the opening of the show of 3 phone calls allegedly from the World Trade Center was aired on the America Remembers documentary in 2002. That 21 seconds of audio. So these have been played before. So that's sort of a lie, but and not the only lie that the documentary tells. Well, it's all lies, really, but so that's interesting in that regard. And that America Remembers is also a fraudulent documentary. We've broken down many times the added audio to the the Herzakhani shot and many other fabrications in that compilation. But I'm going to play now the audio from this documentary, the first 8 or so minutes. Documentary in its entirety is about an hour and a half. It's called 9/11 Phone Calls from the Towers, and it's received over 1 million views on YouTube. And it's, if you type in 9/11 Phone Calls from the Towers, you can get the entire documentary. It's in 2 parts. It's roughly probably an hour 20 long, and it's some pretty interesting stuff in there. Obviously, I'm not going to play all of it. I mean, you know, but I'm going to play some poignant moments, and there's probably a few on this, but you know, I'll get more than enough that we'll be able to see right through this fraud. But so we're going to put this audio on now, and we'll hear a few excerpts from phone calls and family members talking absolute rubbish as they do best. But they had to step up the game for this documentary, and it's not as obvious, but when you really break it down, it's the same difference.
The message that he left for me meant everything to me. I clung to it. I listened to it repeatedly in the days after.
Everybody has told me that has lost loved ones, you'll lose the sound of their voice. I've probably listened to the message hundreds of times.
It's available anytime I want to play it back. It's there. I hear it and I know it. I'm still very fragile to listen to it, and so I'm comforted to know it's there, but I don't listen to it.
On September the 11th, 2001, nearly 3,000 families lost a loved one. The Twin Towers collapsed with such destructive force that only 300 bodies were recovered. But for some families, there is another legacy. Trapped inside the towers, many people tried to make desperate contact with the outside world. Some were able to speak on the phone. Others could only leave messages. Since that day, families have lived with the memory of these final words from their loved ones. Many of these calls have never been heard in public and are featured here for the first time. All are used with the full consent of the relatives, who only now feel ready to talk about them. These recordings shed light on what really happened inside the towers, but they also reveal something more profound about the choices people make in their final moments, who to turn to, and what to say.
Obviously a pretty scary experience. I saw a guy fall out of probably the 91st story all the way down.
Okay. Now you can stay on the line with me.
I just wanted to let you know I love you and I'm stuck in this building in New York. There's lots of smoke and you just wanted you to know that I love you always.
My dog, Coco, wakes me up somewhere approximately 5:30 in the morning and wants to go for a walk. So at 5:30 in the morning, I get out of bed, brush my teeth, throw some water on my face. We walk through the woods for half an hour, 40 minutes. I say a little prayer every single day and talk to Melissa. So it's just, I know she's there. I know she's listening to me. I was the last person from the outside world that she spoke to. I'll always remember that. When you fall asleep sometimes at night and you close your eyes, you can just see her face there saying, "Dad, I love you."
On September the 11th, Bob Harrington's daughter Melissa was in New York for just one day. Age 31, she was a high-powered business executive and was there to oversee the merger of her company. The meeting was on the 101st floor of the North Tower of the World Trade Center.
She was only going to be there that Tuesday when the merger was done. She was flying back to California the next day.
We found nothing of Jim. He was completely destroyed. So the fact that I'd spoken to him means so much to me. I think that the healing process is ongoing. It's important to let people know what families of 9/11 have been experiencing, what we've been going through, what we've gone through. We still have those memories that we don't want anybody to ever forget.
Jill Gartenberg had just started a family with her 35-year-old husband, Jim. A successful real estate executive, Jim had recently accepted a promotion at a new company. On September the 11th, he had only gone in to clear his desk at his office on the 86th floor of the North Tower.
Saying goodbye, I love you, is the last thing I can remember seeing him walking out the door that morning of September 11th.
We just had a plane crash into level 4 of the World Trade Center. The World Trade Center, tower number 1, is on fire. now.
In the minutes after American Airlines Flight 11 collided with the North Tower, the live pictures were flashed across the world.
We have numerous people trapped.
But those inside were unable to see what had happened. Desperate for information, they made more than 3,000 calls in the first 10 minutes alone.
He says he's at the 105th floor at One World Trade Center.
At the top of the North Tower, 100 people were attending a conference at the Windows on the World restaurant. Among them was 31-year-old Christopher Hanley, who made one of the first recorded calls to 911 emergency services that day.
Yeah, hi. I'm on the 106th floor of the World Trade Center. We just had an explosion.
The 106th floor?
Yes.
106, okay.
We have smoke and it's pretty bad. We can't get down the stairs.
All right.
We have about 100 people up here.
Do not leave, okay? There's a fire or an explosion or something in the building. All right, I want you to stay where you are.
Yes.
All right, we're there. We're coming up to get you.
You see the smoke coming up from outside the windows down?
All right, we're on the way. Just sit tight. All right, just sit tight. We're on the way.
All right, please hurry.
Christopher was our only child. He was so special.
To be able to have the 911 audio was really very important. The most emotional, poignant moment for me is when he asked him, please hurry, and thank you. To be able to have that
presence of mind
under pressure like that, I thought was just remarkable. I was really proud of him. I mean, to be able to keep that cool and request, please hurry. I think that was his last words.
So we see, you know, even more absurdity in those clips, and I mean it's particularly poignant because, first of all, to say all those were his last words when he was on that floor with over 100, you know, supposedly over 100 other people. You think he didn't say anything when he got off the phone to anybody else? I mean, it's completely ridiculous. First of all, secondly, we have the same problems that we have from the Kevin Cosgrove calls and the Melissa Doi calls that we heard earlier. First of all, is, you know, the no coughing, and it's particularly poignant because what we need to remember is that in the case of the jumper fraud that we've gone into in other shows and exposed for numerous reasons, the photography and the videography we have of the jumpers is a complete fraud also, and you know, totally reconciles with nobody being in the towers at all. What we need to remember also here is that, particularly in this case, the New York Times has thrown out the figure that over 250 people jumped from the Trade Center on 9/11, a figure that they've never been able to prove, even based on the erroneous footage that we have. Now, the official story is that the falling man, they did a big documentary on, was from the Windows on the World restaurant. Now, they told us that over 100 people were at their breakfast at the restaurant that morning at 8:46 when the plane allegedly hit the tower. So, and as I said, you know, each floor is only an acre in area. And that restaurant, I don't know, it might have been half of a floor, or wouldn't have been an entire floor, but, you know, that area, floor 107 to 110, was sort of where the indoor viewing platform was. I mean, the restaurant was definitely there. We know that. We got hundreds of home videos proving that. We've got numerous testimony from people. Our question in regards to the Hollow Towers has always been, well, what was between floors 107 and, say, 4 or 5 down at the lobby? That's always been our question. But in regards to that particular phone call, you've got over 100 people packed into a small space, plus anybody else that might have been up there in the
three floors above, maintenance crew, people getting ready to open the viewing platform, which opened in about 45 minutes, was scheduled to open 45 minutes after that incident with the alleged plane crash. Where is the noise in the background from the 100 people in the restaurant with them? I mean, come on, nobody's relaying information to him about people hurt from smoke inhalation. I know it was very early after the alleged plane crash, but what people need to remember is, and you don't hear anybody coughing at all in the background, he's not coughing. In regards to the jumper footage, one of the most suspicious things about it was that the vast majority of those jumpers had footage showing jumpers was before the second plane crash. All of the jumper footage is from the North Tower, none from the South, which is, you know, very suspicious in and of itself. Like, why are people jumping next door and nobody jumping in the other place? That's obviously the whole dummy out the window theory that Let's Roll promoted was sort of along those lines. They said the North Tower was like the command center, and that's, they weren't throwing dummies from the other building or whatever. And obviously, you know, it was just fake footage. It wasn't, they weren't throwing dummies out the window, but that was Let's Roll's physical angle to get away from, you know, to get away from basically the whole media fakery thing. It's Phil Jahan's angle. Everything has to be something physical. You don't question the footage too much. Although he is a no-planer now, of course, so he admits that some CGI was used. But in regards to that, most of the jumping footage was within like 5-10 minutes after the plane crash. In fact, people were jumping like within a minute or two, which is like so absurd. I mean, like, if they did manage to get the windows broken, even like, and all that smoke's there, like, what, they just gave up after a minute? Like, yeah, so completely ridiculous. They would die in the building trying to get out. I mean, you know, they wouldn't even have time. They would try and go down the stairs first, and even if the staircases were blocked from plane debris or whatever, then, you know, they would have taken at least some, at least many minutes to find that out. And say they broke the windows for oxygen or whatever, it'll definitely take time to break those windows. It's worth noting we don't have any video at all of anybody breaking a window, which is what they probably all would have had to have done, particularly given we know no plane crash and to blow the windows out. It may have been an explosion on the side that blew some windows out or whatever, but so they got to break the windows, that takes time, then they got to get their oxygen, and then they just jump out, or they pass out and fall out, I suppose. But, and also none of the footage shows anybody jumping really clearly. It all starts sort of mid-jump, you know, when they're already out of the building. A couple of them show them popping out, but you can't see it. You can't see them jumping clearly. You only see them once they're in mid-flight. But yeah, in any case, we're told that lots of people jump from the windows in the World Restaurant, and most of those jumpers were in the first 10-15 minutes. So, you know, again, why isn't he coughing, and why isn't he horrified that people are breaking the windows and jumping out all around him? We've said the falling man was supposedly from the windows in the World Restaurant. And none of those particular family members show any emotion in that documentary either. A couple of the later ones, like, feign that they're crying, but you never see any tears. Put up a good picture of a good video actually of the guy that supposedly shot all these jumpers. It's up on our YouTube channel in the playlist, and he just cannot cry no matter how hard he tries. He even rubs his eyes, but no actual tears come, of course. You know, they could have used capsules or whatever. I don't know why they didn't bother. It's very low rate acting. But he's not relaying any information about people hurt from smoke inhalation. He's saying it's pretty bad, but you know, he's not coughing or anything like that. Not a single measly cough on any of these phone calls. You know, I've had to pause to cough like 5 or 6 times making this episode today. But these people can't cough in the smoke-filled building where 250 people have jumped to their deaths. Are they taking the mickey here? I mean, you know, it's so obvious. You've got to bear in mind with the jumpers and being so quickly before the second tower was even hit. If you want a powerful evidence that nobody's in these towers, then this is it, these phone calls. It's staring everyone square in the face. And it's just, it's farcical. It's absolutely farcical. You know, from the New York Times saying that 250 people jumped, and people jumping from this restaurant, but he's not saying anything about that. You know, it'd be interesting to see if we can get some supposed jumper footage from, like, the time where that phone call was taking place. Because that's a pretty big omission for him to neglect. But, completely fraudulent. I mean, but the biggest giveaway is obviously you can't hear anyone in the background. Which just, there's no way that this can be a natural, something that's not just been recorded in a studio, as I've already said. I've got another clip here for us from this documentary later on, and we'll get into obviously more detail about, and we'll listen to this more absurd audio from this documentary, and we will take a break after that we get back from this particular clip, and then we'll chew over more of the lies that we hear in this clip.
Families were seeing the billowing smoke and the flames licking up the side of the building. It was just a terrible responsibility for the people on the outside to have to say, it's worse than you think.
15 minutes after the North Tower had been hit, most people in Tower 2, the South Tower, were still at their desks and watching the tragedy unfold. Amongst them was 24-year-old trader Brad Fetchett, who left a message for his mother to tell her he was safe.
Hey, Mom, it's Brad. Just wanted to call and let you know. I'm sure that you heard that a plane crashed into World Trade Center 1. We're fine. We're in World Trade Center 2. I'm obviously alive and well over here. But obviously a pretty scary experience. I saw a guy fall out of probably the 91st story all the way down. So you're welcome to give a call here. I think we'll be here all day. But give me a call back later. Love you.
He was trying to reassure us that he was okay, but you could tell as he cleared his voice when he talked about seeing someone fall from the 91st floor that there was a lot of fear in his voice.
It's available anytime I want to play it back. It's there. I hear it, and I know it, and I'm still very fragile to listen to it, and so I'm comforted to know it's there, but I don't listen to it.
Eight floors above Brad in the South Tower was 42-year-old systems analyst Shimmy Beagleisen.
The phone rang and it was Shimmy. Ma, don't worry, I'm fine. And I said, please don't waste any time. I know all about it. Get out. And he said, listen. And he put the receiver up to the loudspeaker, and I heard the announcement, do not leave your office. This building is secure. As we hung up, my nephew called, and he was practically incoherent. He said, Shimmy, Trade Center. I said, Shimmy is okay. And as I said, okay, I never got the K out because I saw the plane hit the other building.
At 9:03, 17 minutes after the North Tower was struck, United Airlines Flight 173 flew into the South Tower. Immediately, the emergency services were flooded with calls, as 700 people were trapped above the impact zone.
Dispatch.
Yes, hi.
Major disaster, number 2 World Trade Center, requesting everything possible.
Northwest conference room.
Tower 2.
room 105.
This is at the World Trade Center. People are trapped.
They
have a call on the line.
The line is open.
What
floor are you on?
They're not answering.
We're getting millions of calls there.
Very interesting indeed. I mean, you know, this is 8 years later and I can't even get the flight number correct, saying flight 173 instead of 175. An absolutely embarrassing and no doubt deliberate mistake to make on an otherwise pretty professional documentary, and what is a huge step up from, you know, what we are used to in terms of the quality of the pictures and the video that they're showing us from these alleged victims and their backstories. But so we're going to listen to another call here, and we'll sort of digest what we hear even more absurd this particular example.
After speaking to the New York Times, Jim's next call was to a local TV news program. At 9:32, 45 minutes after the North Tower was hit, Jim went live on air.
Jim Gartenberg joins us. He was on the 86th floor of, I'm not sure which tower. Was it the east, north or south, Jim?
It's World Trade Center 1, and it's not was. I am here, and I'm stuck right now.
Now, are you above, Jim, or below?
I have no idea. I have no idea where the plane hit. It's my understanding that it's a plane.
Jim, there are two planes. One went into one tower, one went into the other tower. What do you see around you? I mean, are you in smoke? Are you in fire?
The first thing that I want to make clear is that I'm stuck on the 86th floor. A fire door has trapped us. Debris has fallen around us, and part of the core of the building is blown out.
How many people are with you, Jim?
I'm with one other person, and I'm told that people are aware of this. I'm on the 86th floor on the east side of the building facing the East River.
And what time did you get...
If I'm on the air, I want to tell anybody that has a family member that may be in the building that the situation is under control for the moment, and the danger has not increased. So please, all family members, take it easy.
Well, actually, I'd take our next break now, but after we come back from the break, we'll got an interesting piece of audio to play, which totally, it's just the biggest contradiction to that particular story, but we'll be right back. This is Dose of Reality Radio, and you've got James Sloane tonight.
Yeah, Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben? Come on. Yeah, 10-4, Big Ben, for sure, for sure. By golly, it's clean, clear to Flagtown. Come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we got us a convoy.
It was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10 about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Back off them hogs. 10-4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger, them hogs is getting intense up here.
By the time we got into Tulsa Town, we had 85 trucks in all. But they's a roadblock up on the Cloverleaf, and them bears is wall to wall. Yeah, them smokies as thick as bugs on a bumper. They even had a bear in the air. I says, calling all trucks, this here's the duck. We about to go a-hunting bear.
Cause we got great big
Big Ben. Negatory, Big Ben. You're still too close. See how them hulk is starting to close up my sinuses. Mercy sakes, you better back off another 10.
Well, we rolled up Interstate 44 like a rocket sled on rails. We tore up all of our swindle sheets and left them setting on the scales. By the time we hit that shy town, them bears was getting smart. They'd brought up some reinforcements from the Illinois National Guard. There's armored cars and tanks and jeeps and rigs of every size. Yeah, them chicken coops was full of bears, and choppers filled the skies. Well, we shot the line, we went for broke, with 1,000 screaming trucks and 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a chartreuse microbus.
Here, rubber duck to Sodbuster. Come on there, you have 10-4 Sodbuster. Listen, you want to put that microbus in behind that suicide jockey? Yeah, he's hauling dynamite. He needs all the help he can get.
Well, we laid a strip for the Jersey Shore and prepared to cross the line. I could see the bridge was lined with bears, but it didn't have a doggone dime. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber duck. We just ain't gonna pay no toll. So we crashed the gate doing 98. I says, let them truckers roll 10-4.
Well, mercy sakes, good buddy, we're going to back on out here, so keep the bugs off your glass and the bears off your tail. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. This here's a rubber duck on the side. We gone. Bye-bye.
Hello, welcome back. You've got James Sloan tonight on Dose of Reality Radio. We're basically, if you've just joined us, talking 9/11 again at this stage. It's sort of become our bread and butter at the station, and I know particularly Justin, myself, and Brian like to talk about other things from time to time, but obviously when there's not too much happening, we tend to go back to the well a little bit, particularly because there's just so much footage.